Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today we have Lindsay Iskerka. She is a real estate agent in California and a short-term rental investor. She leads the David Green team of Bigger Pockets fame in SoCal, and I'm really excited to have her on the show. How's it going, Lindsay?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's just start. You and I are buddies. We text all the time about Peloton and dumb stuff. So I already know, but why don't you kind of just tell our listeners who you are, how you got into real estate, and you know what your story is.
Yeah, thanks. So quick backstory. After grad school, it was like 2012. I was working and I was a personal trainer. I really got into the fitness space. So I was doing fitness competitions and everything. And I met my now husband, and he had an interest in real estate investing. I had never heard of real estate being like a wealth strategy or anything like that. My parents bought one property when I was seven. They still live there today. And that realtor was not a great experience for them. So real estate really was not on my radar at all. I had a master's degree, and it was not even in my thought process that this is what I would be doing for my life. But he's former law enforcement, and he had an interest in investing. So he dragged me to one of those free real estate investing seminars. And we took the bait and got ourselves into a lot of debt with that large program, this mentorship and a year-long program. And it was a blessing and a curse, because while I feel like the program didn't really deliver all the promises that they give you, right, it put us in a situation where we thought, okay, we have this like $40,000 worth of debt. What are we going to do about it? So it made sense for me to get my real estate license at that time and help to get some commissions that paid on that debt. We did know that we wanted to do house hacking. Like you said, Southern California, born and raised. I'm in the Long Beach and like Orange County region, but David Green Team SoCal, we cover like Ventura County all the way down to San Diego and mountain and desert communities too. But Orange County is really my home, and it's very expensive there. And so we knew we wanted to house hack to get into real estate investing. And so I got my license to help pay down that debt, saved to buy this triplex. That led into like a 1031 exchange. We did out of state investing, and then we got into short-term rentals. In 2021, I had a really cool opportunity. My husband was trying to get out of law enforcement, and he had his loan license, and he heard on the Bigger Pockets podcast that David was looking for lenders. So he thought, why don't I just apply? What's the worst that can happen, right? Maybe they'll connect, because of former law enforcement background, and we were trying to get him out and into real estate full time. And I really didn't think anything would come from it. Lo and behold, he got a call from David a couple of days later, brought him on, and then I met David, and he said he wanted to expand into Southern California. And we formed a partnership in 2021, and that's how I got here today. So made a lot of mistakes, I think, where I try to really share with clients. I'm like, hey, I've walked the journey you're trying to walk, right? I started what I could. I had no money. We had massive debt. No one in my family invests. I made the mistakes. I'll share with you what I've learned along the way, where I'm investing, where our clients are having success. And hopefully when they reach out to me, they feel like I'll walk alongside them as a fellow investor, not just like a real estate agent checking for a commission, right? So quick little background. That's how I got here today.
Okay, awesome. And my first job was also a personal trainer at Gold's Gym.
I didn't know that.
In Austin. Yeah, it didn't last very long. But yeah, I don't recommend working for Gold's Gym as a personal trainer. But that's really funny.
I was independent, so I got like set my own hours and, you know, charge my own rates and everything. But that can be the entrepreneurial bug too, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about your first deal. Was that a house hack?
It was. It was a triplex in Long Beach. We bought it with a zero down VA loan, but you had to have the reserves and everything to buy it. So we lived in one unit, rented out the other two units in the back. And that's how we got started.
Do you still have that one?
No, we sold that one. We had about 250,000 in equity at the time. We had moved out and bought our second primary, was renting out all three units, and they were somewhat cash flowing. This is even pre-COVID, and they're doing fine, but we had all this equity. We knew we wanted to scale. And at the time we thought cash flow, right? You can't cash flow in Southern California, right? So we thought, okay, what is the next best thing to do with this equity? And we really couldn't refinance and pull it out because we had done zero down. Ultimately, we wouldn't be left with enough to really invest with. So we decided to sell it. And we took those proceeds, did a 1031 exchange, rolled them into three out-of-state properties that were going to cash flow, thinking that was scaling our portfolio. So hindsight, I wish I would have kept it. But I think part of being an investor is like you have to make the decisions that you can with the information you have at the time. And that's what we did.
Are you having trouble trying to decide which market to buy in? No problem. That's just one of the many live sessions we offer in Short-Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know about buying and managing short-term rentals from anywhere in the world, right at your fingertips. You'll also get early access to our world-famous Management Monday sessions, live each and every Monday. Don't delay. Turbocharge your generational wealth today. Join us at stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com for a live call with more info on Short-Term Shop Plus.
Okay, cool. And so what is in your portfolio currently?
So currently we have our two short-term rentals and we have a primary. We really simplified. We wanted fewer doors, better performing properties in better markets than chasing the, you know, X number of doors that only yield you so much, right? So we sold our out-of-state investment, long-term rentals. We had two short-term rentals and we have our primary. And we're still looking to buy, but we might want to get back into small multifamily. I think it's going to be our next venture, but who knows? We'll see what the market offers.
Okay. Well, let's hear about your short terms. What are they? Where are they? What do they do?
Yep. So we were favoring short-term rentals in national park destinations. So we figure no matter what's going on in the economy, people always want to go to national parks. We're active and outdoorsy people. So we feel like we cater to that kind of audience. So, or that kind of guest, if you would. So our two short-term rentals are in Joshua Tree, California, and Kalispell, Montana, which is near Glacier National Park. So national parks, they both sleep more than six people, is which we were targeting. At six people, it's like, it makes more sense to get an Airbnb than two hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. Right. So we wanted the larger properties in vacation destination markets, like drivable vacation destination markets near national parks. So those are the two that we have now.
Okay. I've heard a lot about Joshua Tree over the past few years. Excuse me. And I'm not an investor in Joshua Tree, so I haven't seen. I mean, I've heard the same things about it that I hear about the Smoky Mountains that are not necessarily correct all the way across the board. So I would love to hear, you know, you guys have been out there a few years. What or Big Bear, you know, any of those other southern-ish California markets. What does it look like there now? You guys help a lot of clients in that area. So I'd love to hear about these California markets. By the way, guys, Lindsay's team, David Green team, SoCal is like the short-term shop stamp of approval who to buy with in Southern California. So just keep that in mind because she's got a lot of great experience here. So I'm interested to hear about those markets.
Thank you for that. And our advice today is very different than advice we would have given in 2021, right? We're always watching to see what's going on. So what happened, unfortunately, is that a lot of people did flood into those markets and it got bought out a lot by flippers who bought these distressed homes in the desert or the cabins that are distressed. And they put like the builder grade ugly materials into these houses and are trying to sell them for short-term rental prices, right? And there's too many houses out there and tourism has gone down a bit. Occupancy is down, ADRs are down. It's for a couple of reasons. One, I think people in Southern California are feeling the pinch of inflation right now. So fewer people are taking those staycation destinations. My property is like a great fit for like retreats. We have a yoga studio. We've got like stuff like that. So it's like the family reunions, the like the sound healing retreats, yoga retreats. Like that's like the girls' weekends. That was my like target guest. And it was doing great for a long time. It's still doing just fine because we really put the effort into the properties. If someone's going to invest in a Southern California vacation rental market, they have to be committed to making their property outstanding. You cannot just have a mediocre property with the same decor that everyone else has, the, you know, just white everything, no character, no flair, very few amenities. You really have to go above and beyond that in order to make your property even do fine in those markets. We're also being really careful to tell people stay away from the metropolitan markets. I've never recommended someone buy a short-term rental in an area like LA or Orange County, where several cities and neighborhoods even are banning short-term rentals completely. I think we're on a slippery slope there. So if someone wants to buy a home, we recommend they analyze it like a primary house hack or a long-term rental. Midterm rental is still doing very well. But if their only plan in a market outside of a vacation destination market is Airbnb, we try to really be honest with them. We're like, don't bank on doing this for a long time. You could get the rug pulled out from under you, and I don't want you to have a property that is not performing. You've got to pivot, right? Buy the property if it works as a primary, if it works as a midterm rental, short-term rental it while you can if you'd like to, but don't buy a property like in LA just to short-term rental it, because we don't know in the future how these guidelines and ordinances are going to be impacting you. So drivable vacation destination markets will always be in high demand in Southern California, no matter what the economy is doing. But we just recommend like really buy an outstanding property, be committed to making it really nice. And we'll be honest about that. And we analyze it right alongside them. And I would encourage a client to buy something that I myself would not buy if I had their resources and their budget and everything.
Got it. And yeah, that's always kind of been my thought process too, is staying out of the metro areas because they're not dependent on tourism. So most of the other industry, most of the primary homeowners that live there, their income is not going to be dependent on tourism. So they're not going to be understanding about a short-term rental being, you know, next door to them or across the street from them. Like here where I live, I still don't want a short-term rental next door to me, but not for partying, just because, you know, we're trying to raise kids and people in and out. You don't know who people are. But, you know, here I understand that if one does open up next to me, like I live in a vacation destination and that's just what it is here. But I had a client come up a couple, I guess last week, and they were like, why aren't you in any of the top 10 markets for short-term rentals? Why is a short-term job not? And I'm like, what are you even talking about? And they're like, they read some list and it was like Dallas, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, it was all these metro markets. I'm like, Dallas just in the past couple months outlawed all short-term rentals. I mean, maybe you mean Frisco, like up north or something, but just because consistently it's just, you never know what you're going to get. And we had an office in Nashville and we shut it down for that exact reason. We had our fifth buyer client getting into a lawsuit with the city. And I'm like, okay, we're not subjecting our clients to this anymore. So
I think Anaheim was on that top 10 list.
Oh, yeah.
California. And I'm like, they've had a cap on short-term rental permits since 2019. You're not going to get a short-term rental permit approved. Then where people are getting in trouble, and I'm sure you're seeing this where you are too, is that they say, okay, this area is too expensive or oversaturated, right? Let's go to the neighboring city and try there. It's a better price point, fewer short-term rentals out there, and it makes more sense. Those residents outside of Big Bear and Joshua Tree and outside of Anaheim definitely did not sign up for short-term rentals in their area. So they are going to push harder on those bans. Then they get the rug pulled out from under them. We're also seeing the counties get more strict on permit renewals. So some of our clients who have bought existing short-term rentals with a permit that were no longer transferable, you had to apply for your own permit, but you can at least have faith that the county has approved the short-term rental as it is, as this bedroom count, this guest count, everything like that. They've done their inspections already. When our clients buy the property and they apply for their own permit, it got approved. At renewal, the county is like, oh, by the way, this is not a legal bedroom, or the casita cannot be used as a living space. So you have to lower your guest count from 6 to 4. Or is there a permit for the electrical panel, the sub-panel that is heating your cowboy pool? We need to, all these things that we couldn't have predicted are happening beforehand. So a lot of investors are getting very nervous. But if they bought a good property, they're doing fine. If they bought a subpar property, they try to cut corners and still cash flow, that's where they're hurting. Or they try to find the next emerging market that was a neighboring city to a strong market. And that neighboring city now has ordinances against Airbnb or short-term rentals. And they're finding themselves frustrated with that. So we were never like, don't go out of the area. Don't transfer out.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the buy in the neighboring city, like next door market. That worked all right in 2021 when everybody was like, when travel was way up, that kind of worked. And I think it was a little misleading. Let's take the Smokies, for example. Douglas Lake is about 30. It could take you 45 minutes to get to Pigeon Forge from Douglas Lake, and it looks really close. And so we had a lot of people who it's cheaper up there too, who couldn't get in the mix, like in the Smokies, because there were just too many offers and too many things and too expensive. So they bought stuff up at Douglas Lake, which I've always said, be careful doing that. They drain the lake for 6 months out of the year. So it might look lakefront and then it's actually mud front. And it's a lot farther than it looks. And, you know, just people buying like 45 minutes away from stuff. And that worked then, but they were the first people to turn around and sell when tourism started kind of going back to normal, because people they don't want to be 45 minutes away. They want to be in the thick of things. So I see the appeal of wanting to do that, but I just don't think that it's a great idea because you just don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Southern California. So what I know about Southern California is like the Joshua Tree and Big Bear. Say I'm a new investor and I live in California and maybe I want to stick close to home and buy something around there, what area do you suggest in terms of, you know, being able to be successful the way the market is right now?
I would suggest that they buy like a house hack that has an additional unit. Now, you can't short-term rental ADUs. That's something I really want to make sure people know. Accessory dwelling units, you can get them permitted. You can midterm rental them. You cannot short-term rental them. So if you are going to look for a property that you can do a short-term rental, and just be mindful of that. We have some clients that will live in the ADU and put their main house on Airbnb. Now, we do have the Olympics coming. Right. We got the Olympics coming in 2028. So I would suggest like looking for a property that's like a 2 to 4 unit, maybe has an ADU or something, and midterm rental it, because that potentially could be a really great money maker once we have the whole world coming basically to LA and the surrounding areas. Long Beach is very coastal, right? Long Beach is a year-round place that people would visit for several different things. The convention center, the beach right there, very close to LA. So that's still an area. Now, some neighborhoods in Long Beach have actually banned short-term rentals, unfortunately, around the university there. But in general, you still can get a short-term rental permit approved with the city. But those guidelines do change all the time. So I would suggest still going to like a coastal market that is close to places people would go to, like LA or San Diego. Just be mindful of what you can and can't do and have a backup plan for if 7-day stays or anything less than 30-day stays do get outlawed. Can you work this as a midterm rental, yes or no? So I would look for the areas where Olympics are coming to, coastal, and also near universities are always a good idea. Near universities really do well too. Traveling students, traveling nurses always come to that area to stay for 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months. So that's where I'd focus on. If they want to do just short-term rentals, they may get the rug pulled out from under them at some point to just plan to pivot if that is going to be their strategy.
Okay, cool. Now let's switch gears to Montana for a minute. So Glacier National Park, I've been up there to Whitefish and Kalispell, skied up there with the kids a couple years ago. It's awesome. I kind of stopped looking at it just because I want to be able to use it myself some. And going almost to Canada is really far from Florida. So we started looking for properties a little bit closer. But that's a great market for short term. So what, tell me about, you know, what you own there and what you see in that market.
Yeah. So Kalispell, Montana has been like under the radar a little bit. I wouldn't say it's a booming short-term rental market, but you still can do it there. And let me just say the permitting process for getting that permit approved versus San Bernardino County for Joshua Tree is very different. And you're going to have to decide what kind of property type that you like. So out in Montana, you can be closer to Glacier National Park, but you are going to lack cell service or you're going to lack access to amenities. So just being mindful of like, what is your target guest experience going to be like? We want to target families, larger families, have a place where if they need to go to REI or Costco or something, it was a quick 5-minute drive away, 35-minute drive to Glacier National Park. It's only 20 minutes to Whitefish Ski Resort. So if they want to ski, they can stay in Whitefish for like, you know, a very high price, a ski resort type of price, or they can go 20 minutes down the mountain a bit into more of the town and spend half of what they would. We also get a lot of bookings for people out there that bought land in our building or they're visiting family out there. So it does well year round, but summer is like the most, like we're at like 96% occupancy between middle of June into middle of September, because it is just that lots of weddings, lots of people visiting the national park. So we try to find a really versatile property that was not away from amenities, 10 minutes at the airport, really trying to find it as centrally located as possible. And then also it's easier to find vendors. I think when people try to go too far out into the mountains or too close to the national parks, especially in an area that is not really known for short term rentals per se, it's hard to find your vendors. It's hard to find a reliable cleaner and things like that. So being more in the city, of Kalispell itself, let us find a better cleaning crew, at least like three different cleaning crews, and get supplies to the property much easier than it would be if you had to go up the mountain. We love that area. So, you know,
If you want to buy a short-term rental in one of the best vacation markets in America, you're looking for the Short-Term Shop. They are the experts in the vacation rental space. Their team of realtors are fantastic. If you use the Short Term Shop to buy your home, you'll have access to free classes with me to teach you how to get your property up and running. Join us at theshorttermshop.com, brokered by eXp.
Did you know that we're officially back in a buyer's market? That's right. Even though interest rates continue to rise, they are causing prices to fall. So there's finally room for you to do regular real estate investor things that we couldn't do for so long, like gasp, negotiate, make lower offers, ask for sellers to cover some of your closing costs. So it's a really great time to buy in terms of being able to get a lower purchase price and being able to negotiate. So if you're looking for your first or next short-term rental, it's a perfect time to reach out to us at the Short Term Shop. Let our team of agents in any of our true vacation market destinations help you find the perfect investment. Jump on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected to get started. We are brokered by eXp Realty. See y'all over there. I'm surprised to hear that the summer is the high season, because I just assumed, you know, ski season would be the high season in the winter.
And you need to go visit in summertime.
Yeah, maybe I should. And I will say, so we stayed in an Airbnb there in Whitefish. And when I was looking, I looked out in the mountains because I'm like, we want to be out in the mountains. And there were a lot of beautiful condos in Whitefish proper that I ended up booking, but I could just hear my husband in my brain before I booked going, "You drug me all the way to Montana to stay in a condo." But why I didn't book out in the mountains is because I'm from Mississippi. I don't know how to drive in snow. I didn't know, or at least the hosts of the places that I was looking at didn't give any kind of detail on what the access situation would be with snow. So we just went with a condo in town, but it was really gorgeous. And it seemed to me, in the very little time that I spent looking at Airbnbs there, is that there's not a lot of like sophisticated self-managers. Like, we stayed in what was easily a $3 million condo, I would guess. And it was flat pricing. They weren't using dynamic pricing. They wanted to meet us. It was a property management company. They wanted to meet us at the property to hand off the keys. And it was like, you know, we got in at 11. It takes forever to fly from Florida to Kalispell. And I'm like, no, don't come meet me. I'm like, my kids are falling apart. My husband's cranky. Just tell me how to get in. So is that the case? Or did I just have like an interesting experience where management was just kind of like behind the times?
It would be a lot more common to have that experience that you just had. Yeah. I think my skills as like an agent and a short-term rental host helped me manage that property remotely more efficiently. You are going to run into that. It's like you can rent an Airbnb that is like a barn on someone's farm, right? And they will meet you to do that. We visited one time, we were looking and we stayed on 40 acres, like this farmhouse on 40 acres right there in town. And the guy was like, you're going to see my dog running around. His name is Vincent. He's very friendly. Vincent the dog. Yeah. And he greeted us every morning. There's some that'll bring you, you know, fresh eggs to your, to your thing with their chicken coop. So it's a lot more of like the small town mom and pop type of host that you are going to meet, which of course, if you have flights into Kalispell at 11 o'clock at night, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But there's not very many self-managers out there because they most of the managers in the area or owners in the area are local.
Okay, cool. Well, it was a beautiful spot and I would definitely go again. And would you say your desert place or your mountain place is your favorite in terms of performance and the investment itself, not just the place that you like to go?
Oof. That's difficult because I feel like they're both my children and I love them and they drive me crazy for different reasons in different, very different ways, right? So the Joshua Tree property does generate more revenue. It does. It's more booked. The slow season for that is like July, August, the summer months is just miserable up there. And then it does really well from September all the way through May. But that one is a lot more high maintenance. It is a lot more things I'm having to fix. The pool has ripped like three times, right? Because the heat just, you know, hits it and it's I had to replace it like every year or so. Guests in Southern California that are driving out there tend to have higher expectations than the guests from Wyoming or Idaho driving to Montana for a time in Glacier National Park, right? Their expectations are a bit different than someone else going to a Joshua Tree retreat kind of property. So lower maintenance and still great return, my Montana property, 100%. From a strict revenue perspective and like a successful Airbnb perspective, my Joshua Tree property, for sure.
Okay, awesome. Can't imagine that, California people being high maintenance.
Oh my goodness. I had someone send me pictures of like under the couch cushions, or they're like, your hot and cold knobs are reversed. And, you know, all these different things. Well, I had one person ask me if I had a garlic mincer. Do you have a garlic mincer or a lemon zester? I'm like, I have a knife and a cutting board. I don't have like a Sur La Table shop in my Airbnb. I'm sorry. She's like, you really should have a garlic mincer. I'm like,
you really should. How dare you? This is basic kitchen gadgets that we have to have.
Exactly. So like, I should have been the listing. Sorry, no garlic mincer. I have a knife set and a cutting.
Oh man. Well,
oh, it's fun.
Yeah. I mean, it is fun. We enjoy our short-term rentals, even though they drive us crazy sometimes. But so let's switch gears again. And I want to talk a little bit about the real estate market as a whole and just general expectations and things like that. So what I'm seeing, and I posted a reel about this yesterday, is I'm not talking about our need to sellers, like people who might be financially distressed, who may be over leveraged, who need to unload. I'm talking about our want to sellers of understanding what is on the market and not just what has closed. So for example, we've had a few big funds that are listing with us. They didn't buy with us, that we've got their properties listed and they are really, really like hyper-focused on the comps that have sold, which is important. And, but those comps sold, you know, 6 months ago, and there's like 20 properties in this general area for sale of the same bedroom count, same size, that are all cheaper than some of these listings that we have. And they're just not understanding why ours aren't selling. It's like, well, we're the most expensive property on the market and we're not the nicest one either. So the right price properties are selling, properties with really good rental history are selling. But I think nowadays it's almost more important to look at the competition on the market and where they're priced more so than the comps that may have sold, you know, in what was a different time, even just 6 months ago. What do you think?
Absolutely true. And it's going to vary too, if we're talking about just short-term rental specific or even like primary homes too. In Southern California, the same thing, the homes that are priced right in a good location and are nice are going really quick. We got multiple offers, way over list price, and that has not changed in that market. But if it's a home that's not as nice, if it's ugly, if it's, you know, has deferred maintenance or whatnot, it is sitting on the market for a little bit if you're trying to get that same price or similar to that same price that the really nice house is selling for. When it comes to short-term rentals, what we're seeing in Joshua Tree is pretty astounding. So we have several foreclosures out there right now.
Oh, really?
We do. And it's a mix of flippers that got into the area, like I mentioned before, and they bought these distressed, like Breaking Bad looking houses, right? And they put the ugly standard flip materials, no character, white everything, and just and no amenities in the backyards, right? And they're trying to sell it for $500,000-$600,000. Well, they don't sell. They didn't sell, especially once rates increase. Right. Those homes just did not sell. And on top of that, with rates increase, tourism in the area also decreased and occupancy decreased. So people just stopped buying. They stopped buying that kind of property. There was a while where people were buying anything in Joshua Tree that looked halfway decent, and they're just forking the money over to redo it, furnish it. Now they want, if they're going to buy in the area, they want turnkey. They want to know exactly what your history was. They want to know what amenities do you have? Do you have a team in place, right? Do you have the boots on the ground in place? Can I just take this over essentially and relist on Airbnb and everything? So we have a lot of houses out there that just flat out didn't sell. And there are these investors that have their notes due and they're in foreclosure. So that's just bringing like a lot of the prices down. And we do have the panic sellers, people that didn't buy with us, but bought properties that were just not good, right? Mm-hmm. Functional obsolescence, too small, not a great area, weird, right? And they're not performing. They're like, oh, short-term rentals don't work. I'm like, no, you bought a bad property, right? And they're trying to sell them and they're desperate to sell. So they have their prices like down. I mean, if I had to venture how much prices had dropped in Joshua Tree, we're in the double digits for sure.
Oh,
we're
wow.
in the double digits from like a year and a half ago, because prices were so inflated because there were also a lot of people selling furnished short-term rentals with the purchase price, including the furnishings and everything. Yeah. And then you're trying to sell. It's like, you're looking at the comps, like you said, and it's been really a challenge for some people. If they need to sell, they have to be realistic about what someone will pay in that market. And they have to be willing to fork over the actual rental history. How did your property perform? And you and I know that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make that much or that little money when you take over the property, but they still want to see a history that guests are looking at property. So it's been really interesting. The foreclosures and panic sales in the area have really dropped prices down in the Joshua Tree market, and Big Bear too. Big Bear, same thing. We're seeing that as well.
Yeah. So all of you buyers out there, listen to this, because A, you want to make sure you buy the right property, but B, don't swipe left on properties because they don't work at the asking price. Find that number that the numbers work for you and just offer it, because you never know if somebody's distressed. You never know if they're just tired of it and they've already gotten 10 low offers and here you come with number 11 and they're like, fine, just take it. I'm tired of this thing. And I wanted to share an interesting statistic too. So 80% of our closings right now across 20 markets are there are already people who have bought short-term rentals with us before. I actually haven't done the numbers on people who might already own short-term rentals in markets that we're not in. So that should tell you new guys something, that at least a minimum of 80% of the people closing on short-term rentals right now are experienced investors. So the people that see the opportunity in the market, like, yes, rates suck. We're not saying we're not saying buy stuff that the numbers don't work at the rate you're able to get. But because that the rates have cleared out a lot of the garbage buyers who just said, oh, 2% interest, what's that payment on a beach house? I can buy a beach house. We'll just throw it on Airbnb and make $1 zillion and didn't treat it like a business. Those guys are gone. So the true investors who are really serious are able to get good deals. It takes some time. You're not going to find one on the second time, but those are the people who are closing on properties right now. And I would pay attention to that if you're new and worried about it. Just make sure that you run your numbers really well and you pay good attention. But the deals are out there. They're just a little farther and fewer between, or whatever that saying is. So I found that really interesting.
No, that's a great point. And I think people can find opportunity on those who need to sell right now, because travel will pick back up again, right? Values will pick back up again. I'm like, look at Southern California, look at any good market in the US, prices tick up, right? So if you can get a deal potentially on a good short-term rental right now, because someone is in a situation where they have to sell, that could be where the opportunity is. Now, it's still going to have to take a lot of time, investment, and skill to run that as a hospitality business, right? It's not a passive investment, as I know you are very real about that. And it's one reason why I respect you so much, right? Because you don't sell a dream. You sell a reality. Like, you have to get really good at this and develop a hospitality business in order for your property to succeed long-term. But if someone can say, okay, this property grossed this much and this person needs to sell for whatever reason, and they're selling it for this price, if I hold on to this, wait for travel to pick back up, whenever it's going to turn around, then you're going to be glad you bought the price that you did, because prices will go up and they'll go up higher in the future. So there could be opportunity for the right buyer with the right set of skills and the right mindset.
Yeah, and something that I'll add to that. So in luxury markets where there are a lot of just second home buyers that have no interest in doing Airbnb. They're just, like here on 30A, people just buy properties. They don't put them on rental and just, that's what they have. It's fun for their family and that's it. So in luxury markets like that, I've found that when people over-theme and do like a big, Orlando, Disney, everything's crazy themed. We've had problems with in the more luxury markets like here, selling those kinds of properties, because a lot of those luxury buyers come in, and even though it has amazing rental history and it's a big property, they look at that and go, well, I want a luxury property and this has like murals all over the walls and I don't like that. And that's been the feedback that we've gotten from buyers on a couple of our listings that are super themed in markets where theming isn't a thing. So you kind of have to think about that too as a buyer. I mean, as a seller, if you're super themed, like, do we need to paint over this to get this sold for the highest amount? And I think that's an opportunity for buyers, guys. So if you're looking in a luxury area and there is a super themed property, you might be able to get a deal on that, which is good for you because the super themed ones do well typically on Airbnb. But because the other buyers in the market are looking for like the clean, elegant look, you might be able to get a deal on those. So I would definitely keep an eye on that type of property also.
Such a good point, because there's a lot of people that post like, you have to have a theme. You need to put it towards this theme. We're seeing that a lot in the Joshua Tree market. As you were talking, I kept on thinking about the literal Barbie beach house in Malibu. Imagine when they try to sell that thing. I'm like, oh gosh, that's gonna be interesting. But yeah, that was really good advice. I hope people rewind that and listen to you say it again.
Yeah. So you just have to find like the little avenues in each market of the things that you might be able to get deals on. And it's going to be different in every market. I don't want to speculate, but what do you see happening in the real estate market as a whole over the next year or so?
Oh, it's very different than if you would have asked me at the end of 2023, when they were saying, oh, Fed's going to cut rates. We're anticipating a very busy 2024. It's steady right now. I don't have a crystal ball. I frankly don't know what's going to be taking place the second half of the year. What I do know is that we are in hard economic times. We are. And at some point, that's going to come to the forefront. At some point, that is going to result in rates ticking downwards. And I don't know what that's going to be. It could be drastic or it could be little. I don't think we need a lot of movement when it comes to interest rates going down for the market to pick up like crazy, because everyone's baseline adjustment, and David talks about this all the time, like a baseline adjustment of what a good versus a bad interest rate is drastically different than 2021. I remember when rates hit 3%, and buyers were like, oh, that's a bad rate. And thinking, are you kidding? You know, 3%. Then when they hit 5%, people are like, oh, rates suck. How many people would kill for a 5% interest rate right now? We're seeing people like buy down their rate almost too much, because we're like, how long are you going to hold on to this property? Do you really want to buy down the interest rate that much? But the safety and like the perception of a good versus a bad interest rate is very different. So in today's market, we just need like a low 6 to spark all this pent up demand. And we, at least in my market, firmly believe we're going to see an influx like we saw in 2021, overbidding craziness, waiving contingencies. I never waived inspection contingency. That was never something I suggested a buyer do, but people are going to feel desperate once again to get into a home because they can see very clearly that prices are still going up. The wages are not keeping up. If they don't buy soon, they may not be able to afford at all. And, you know, it's a very scary reality. So I think that we will see interest rates tick down, but essentially we might see interest rates tick down just a little bit. And that is going to spark a lot of pent up demand among buyers. I don't think we'll see 3%, 4% interest rates. If we do, it'll be because we have really hard economic times and people will be nervous to buy because they're unsure about the economy, right? So there's always going to be something keeping people on the sidelines, but a bit of an ease in interest rates will open the floodgates of buyers sitting on the sidelines for sure.
I'm actually a little bit worried about that because right now it's already like there's very little inventory. There's very little new properties being built. And I agree with you. I think that prices are going to go up quite a bit if interest rates get into the low 6s, because everybody's going to rush. Like, for example, the house I live in, I was talking to some moms yesterday and people were talking about like, oh, what they don't like about their house and they'd like to be able to move. They weren't planning on living in this house forever. So my house that I live in, I did not pay this price for it or anywhere near it. But in order for me to downgrade into a house that is not quite big enough, like maybe one bedroom too small, $2.5 million. And it's regular people can't do that. And, you know, it's like that in every market, maybe not the exact numbers, but the ratios are the same. And people don't want to spend 2-3 times what they paid to downgrade. And I think that once rates get to like I said, I think you're right. Low 6s. I think everybody's going to be out there. Like maybe I'm being a little too crazy, but I'm like, should I, there's some new pre-constructions like down the road from my house. I'm like, should I get some of those and rent those so that like my kids can afford to live when they grow up? Cause I worry about them not ever going down. Cause typically they don't, you know, they might have some small fluctuations, but they trend upwards. Now I'm being like a little crazy conspiracy theorist, but I worry about that, about my kids being able to afford houses.
I do too. We firmly believe like we're like, we need to have at least in a few houses so that our kids can have a house in case, you know, government has to also own the house with you, or, you know, the subsidized housing is going to be more of a thing. We're seeing that trickle in California, just a little bit of these different programs, right? Where it's like, okay, we'll grant you this money, but we have an equity share in your property. Great. Yes. Let's get more people into housing, but just be mindful that that does mean that they also have an interest in your property. So I see that becoming more and more of a thing. And I hope I'm wrong, but just in case, we have to plan for things like that. And I've watched, I mean, I've been in real estate for 9 years now as an agent, and I've seen flat out that people who did not buy when they could afford it because they wanted to wait until they can afford the home that they really wanted, like the one they wanted to live in forever. And they're just like, we'll just rent and save until we can afford that. They cannot afford that. They're still renting. And I honestly feel like they will never be able to buy because they can't get pre-approved for even a townhome or a condo. Condos in my area are, you know, in the 600,000 plus, depending upon the market. So it's just with HOA. So that's a big fear that I have.
I mean, I would hope that the private mortgage industry would step in with, like, I don't know, like a 50-year loan product or something to make things more, because they have those in Europe, something to make things more affordable if it were to get too crazy. Maybe it won't, you know, maybe everything will sort itself out. But this is what I think about at 2 o'clock in the morning is, are my kids going to be able to afford to live?
Same.
All right. Well, I think that is it for my questions. So we're coming to the end of the show. We ask these three questions to everyone who comes on. First one is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Lindsay?
Oh, poor 20-year-old Lindsay. What I would tell that version of myself is, one, you don't even know the journey you're about to embark on. And it is going to be so different than anything anyone else close to you has done. And you're going to get all kinds of opinions and all kinds of advice towards you. Before you take any of that to heart, understand they mean well, but would you trade places with that person? Have they built anything? Have they accomplished what you're trying to accomplish? Have they learned lessons that you're hoping to avoid, right? If you would not trade places with that person, understand that their opinions and their advice to you as a new investor, a new agent, new entrepreneur is going to be well-meaning, but just take it with a grain of salt. Appreciate it. Don't take advice from even those closest to you if you wouldn't necessarily trade places with them in that area. So, and just keep your head down. I think people look for opportunity before really becoming really good at what they do, right? Yeah. I want to find a mentor. I want to find the person that's going to make me successful, or, you know, I'm going to find the realtor. I'm going to find the whoever that's going to make me a millionaire, right? When in reality, if you spent that energy really intentional about becoming so good at what you do, you know, when I was a new agent, I was like, I'm going to be the best agent that I absolutely can be. I'm going to master this so that I feel like clients need me, right? Yeah. That I can really, truly help them with a servant's heart. That way, when I met David Green, I was what he was looking for. Versus like, I want to meet somebody like a David Green that's going to make me great. It was like, no, I had to become really great at first so that when I met him, the opportunity would present itself and I could seize it. So just keep your head down and work. You're working towards something and opportunities that you don't even know are coming your way yet.
Great advice. And what advice would you give? This is the second question. What advice would you give a new investor who's getting started today?
Don't look in secondary markets for short-term rentals. I'm just kidding. That is one thing, but try really hard not to look for hacks or any secret sauces towards success. If something's being sold to you that you can have financial independence or wealth without becoming a better version of yourself, without adopting a new skill set, without having to take risks, it's a lie and don't fall for it. Also, don't be afraid to make mistakes. I have made plenty of mistakes. We bought bad deals, right? We have fumbled and failed forward along the way, but my goodness, we are light years ahead of where we would be if we didn't take any risks and didn't buy any real estate 9 years ago. We accomplished 10-year goals in 5, even while making mistakes. So don't be afraid to make mistakes. Just make the best decisions that you can at the time that you have, or the information that you have at the time, I should say, and stop looking for hacks and all the courses to tell you everything you need to know. Go buy something and stop being afraid of making mistakes. It's inevitable, but you'll still be further ahead than you would be if you never got started.
Great advice. And last question, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Mindset specifically, I have two that I can't. It's just like my short-term rentals. I don't know which one I like more. I like them for different reasons, right? These two books drastically changed my mindset and I'm grateful for them. One is Extreme Ownership. You're responsible for all of your success, good and bad, wherever you are in your life is your fault. And that, for me as a control freak, helps me because I'm like, it's in my control. I can do something about it versus blaming the victim or blaming the market, blaming my client, blaming whoever, right? It's on me. I'm responsible for it. So I love that book and that mindset. And then Atomic Habits, where, you know, you and I talk about Peloton a lot, right? Where it's like, I put my shoes next to my treadmill so that it's one less obstacle where I'm like, oh, I got to go all the way downstairs and get my shoes before I run. Or, you know, you set yourself up for success with these little habits that you have, and it helps you to control the day and therefore get you closer to your goals and accomplish more. So Atomic Habits for sure. And Extreme Ownership, for mindset specifically.
Awesome. Great recommendations. So if our clients want to follow you, get in touch with you, I mean, our listeners want to follow you or get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah. So probably the easiest way is on Instagram. That's where I am the most. And that's the easiest way to get to know me. And you can send me a message there. My handle is at Lindsay Iskierka Realtor. So Lindsay Iskierka Realtor. Probably once you put in Lindsay and then ISK, it'll pop up because not many people have my last name. So that's the best way to get a hold of me. And then BiggerPockets as well. But I don't look on there all that well. But Instagram is the best way to get a hold of me.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your market insights and your part of the world. And look forward to this one, Aaron. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Avery. This is fun.